Welcome to episode 18 of the Power On Retro Gaming Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, James, and I'm joined by the handheld veteran, Scott.
Hi, I hope there's no sexual connotation around that, but I can
assure you, Scott,
it's not currently in my hand. Going well, my man. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad, not too bad. Had a busy day, but yeah, we're here to talk about some games.
Yes, we most certainly are. And I believe our first item for today is going to be talking about the Nintendo 64. Basically, what we're going to discuss is when it was released back in 1996. Where were you, or what were you doing? When did you get one? How did you get it? What's your earliest memories, your first games? That's what we're going to talk about. So I'll start off. I was basically... Well, it was probably like a lot of people. I was at home when it was announced and released, and I was very excited for it. Yeah. Having a Super Nintendo and a Nintendo before that, we were super excited for this. It was 3D. I remember seeing Mario on, there was a small ad on TV that showed, I think, Wave Racer, Mario 64, and Mario Kart for a couple of seconds, and I was blown away by the graphics. I couldn't believe it. I was like, oh my Lord, look at this. so anyway, a few months went by, and... I remember my parents, one day they took us to Knox City, and my brother was saying to me, oh, we have to convince them to get it for us today. They've been talking about it. And I was like, oh, it's probably not going to happen. You know, they're really expensive. Anyway, so they ended up getting one for us, which was great. We came home. We were so excited to play it. And they're like, no, you have to go outside for a few hours. You have to go outside. We're going to set it all up for you. You have to go outside. So we went outside for about, 2 hours. Now, looking back, that thing takes about 25 minutes max to set up, brand new out of the box.
Yeah.
If you've got one now, you know it takes about 30 seconds to set up. Anyway, so it came with Mario Kart, by the way, and we got an extra controller. So anyway, we come back inside, and for the first time in my life, my parents are playing Mario Kart. Both of them were just sitting there playing it. It was unbelievable to see, and we were so excited, and just so much joy it brought to the family, and just to sit down and play, it was really cool. And yeah, we loved Mario Kart, had Donkey Kong in it. We were really excited. And it wasn't long after that until we started getting games. We never did get Mario 64, but we did get GoldenEye, not too far off and not too far after. And I think a game called, I think it was V Rally.
Yep. Did that come on the 64 as well?
Yeah,
it might have.
I don't know if it was V-Rally. It had a Dodge Viper on the front that had teeth. I don't know. If you can remember, if anyone's listening and they can
was
remember.
Was that a Top Gear game?
Oh, look, it might have been.
I do remember that cover, though. It was like a blue Dodge Viper.
Yeah, Dodge Viper.
Pinch stripes in the middle.
Yeah, I'm just trying to remember now. But anyway, we got that game because my dad was like, well, you got to get a racing game, even though we had Mario Kart. So we got that, and then a few months later, for my birthday, I got Kobe Bryant courtside, which was, it was called Top Gear Overdrive.
Yep.
So we had Top Gear Overdrive, GoldenEye, Mario, Super Mario Kart, and not soon after, Kobe Bryant courtside, which was basically, I was set with that game. I absolutely loved Kobe Bryant courtside. It was the greatest game in my mind at the time. I couldn't get enough of it. Yeah, so that was basically for me. We just got it pretty close to release, not straight away, probably about 6 months after. But,
yep.
I mean, everyone around us was getting them and talking about how good, and the parents were talking about how good they were. And, yeah, I just remember the feeling of going to the store and seeing Nintendo 64 everywhere, posters, massive signs. And they had a big display for Super Mario 64, which I'm shocked we didn't get because we went to go and buy it. But then, for some reason, at the last minute, we switched to GoldenEye.
Yeah.
And I was a bit disappointed about that, but then GoldenEye was really good, so I didn't really care. But looking at Super Mario 64 then, I was like, wow, I couldn't believe the graphics. It was unreal. I was like, this looks like an amazing game. So I did pick that up later in life, if you're wondering. Actually, I have two copies. Anyway, so that was just the all excitement, and obviously going after that, we've got Donkey Kong 64 and Lilac Wars or Star Fox. Super Smash Bros. When that released.
All the big hitters.
Yeah, we just got all the games, like all the big ones. But, we never got Mario Party, never got Mario 64. So, yeah, but it was an awesome time in gaming because it just felt like something brand new rather than 2D graphics, into 3D graphics. And that was the last time, I think, if you weren't there for that transition period between Super Nintendo and 64, like any kid born after that would only ever experience 3D graphics unless they went back and played something on a mobile or a Game Boy or something like that. But for us now, it's been 3D ever since. So it was a shock to the system to be like, wow, we can move in all directions. You know what I mean? So yeah, really cool experience, and just something I wanted to touch on in the podcast. So what about you?
Well, where was I when I first heard about the 64? Would have been at home, I assume so. I can't really remember, to be honest with you. I remember seeing advertisements about it, but I had the PS1 real early. We traded in the Super Nintendo for it, and this was at my dad's. I was always playing that, like Ridge Racer, Zero Divide. That's what I was playing first up. Every time I'd go to my dad's, would be playing that, because at my mom's, we still had the Super Nintendo. Mm-hmm. But there was one day when I came home, 64 was just set up in my bedroom, and my mum's partner at the time, he was just playing Banjo-Kazooie. And I was like, what the hell is this? And, you know, it's one of my favorite games. We've even beaten it together.
No thanks to my wife, yeah.
If you don't know the story, I had about 99 notes, and all I needed was the last one. I was walking on the haunted house's table, and my 64 is very sensitive, and she gently knocked it, but claimed she didn't, and it restarted the console. I had to do it all again.
But you did it in the end. You went back and you completed it.
Yes. That was a good day. Even when we were playing the final board game, that was a great memory.
Yeah, that was fun. That was fun.
But going back, when I came home, he had Banjo-Kazooie playing. And I was like, what is this game? He was playing the first level, first world. It was the introduction world of Banjo-Kazooie, if you haven't played. Where you learn your basic moves, and they also had GoldenEye as well.
Oh, wow.
No, actually, my mistake, it was just Banjo-Kazooie. Like, a couple of months later, I was at someone's house, they had GoldenEye, and I was playing it there, and I couldn't believe how good the graphics looked on this game, how fun it was, and I came straight home, told my mom, we need to get this game. And so we did. That's when like my stepbrother would come over, friends would come over just to play your split screen GoldenEye.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just really good memories.
Sorry to cut you off there, but did you ever, two questions really, did you ever pick up the second James Bond game on the 64? World is Not Enough?
I did not know.
I don't know anyone who played that played GoldenEye. I got it for about $4 from a market probably 5 or 6 years ago, but never played it.
Yeah.
And the same with Banjo-Tooie. We got that right at the end of the 64's lifespan, new, because it was one of the last games, if I remember correctly. And then we ended up trading in our 64 to get towards the GameCube, and that went along with it. So didn't play a lot of Banjo-Tooie, but definitely had it.
That was very late.
Yeah. Did you was yours a grey 64, Bunny, or was it a coloured one?
No, it was the grey 64 that came with that clear purple controller.
Yep.
I think it was like the twin console pack at the time. Going back, in Australia, the Nintendo 64 came out in March of 97.
Yep.
And I would have got it probably early 98, I'd say. Maybe it was around my birthday, but I don't recall.
It's an amazing feeling. Similar to what my parents did. They set it up without us knowing, but, well, we knew we had it, but we didn't know it was sitting. So I think they said they were going to keep it till Christmas because it wasn't far away.
Yeah.
Because I got Kobe Bryant. But we had the controller that came with it, and we also bought a blue controller, but when we got home, the joystick didn't work on the blue controller, so we had to take it back, and we actually ended up getting the clear purple. Yeah, and I remember one of the problems I had with it was in Kobe Bryant courtside, in order to play the playoffs, you need to have a memory card, and I never had one. So yeah. I just do exhibition games, and that's all I'd ever do. But I always wondered to myself what it would be like to have a memory card.
Oh, really?
But yeah, never got one. Great system.
Yeah, great system. During when I had the Nintendo 64 back in that era, I remember getting the memory card, the Rumble Pack. This was later on. At first, you didn't really need it because you had the games still inbuilt save. But then there was a certain ones, and then you had to get the expansion pack for Donkey Kong 64, but that came with the bundle. Yeah. I remember, again, Mario 64 and Mario Kart 64 from my Nono and Nona for Christmas. That was a good memory. Duke Nukem 64, I had a bunch of mates come over and play that one with me. That was good. Mm. Used to hire a lot of games from the Blockbuster down the road.
I think our gaming, let's say gaming relationship in terms of consoles, didn't really connect until the GameCube was probably the first game we played together. During that era of the GameCube.
Yeah, it was late into the GameCube's era. I just really wanted that game when you came over that night. And
yeah, I remember going to your house and seeing a whole stack of PS2 games that weren't even opened. And thinking to myself, this guy is a weirdo. Like, why doesn't he open these games and play them? But now I understand. Now I get it. Believe me. Yeah. But no, that's...
There's probably still some of those games in the packaging.
Yeah, I know, right? How good is that? There's definitely some in my house, that's for sure. In terms of other games for the 64, I'm trying to recall what I actually had. I know, as I mentioned, Super Smash Bros. Lilac Wars, but... The Lilac Wars wasn't actually ours. We borrowed it off a friend and he just never ended up getting it back. So I don't know what happened there. But my 64 I own now isn't the one I had as a kid. I actually got rid of it, as I said, to get the GameCube, much to my disgust. But I ended up just coming across a mate who had one and he wanted to sell it for $20. So I bought it off him and that's the one I have to this day. And the original one I had, we had a Nintendo Power that came with some stickers, some Turok stickers put on it. And funnily enough, the one we played at what's that retro bar we went to?
Bartronica.
I had those stickers. So I was like, oh my God, I wonder if that's my old childhood one in that cap. So, that was a funny thing to see. But, it was a bit of a funny sort of console because everyone seemed to have one. I ran into those games like Rush, which I really liked, but I didn't have. I didn't have Donkey Kong till that came out. I had it towards the end of its life as well. Never finished it. But, I was hooked on the games that I did have. I definitely played the life out of them.
Yeah. Speaking, my Nintendo 64 that I have now is not the one that I had back then either. When the PS2 came out, I sold all my Nintendo 64 games, console, all in the boxes, all in mint condition because I looked after everything. As I do to this day. Just so I could get the PS2 near release. Now the PS2 was over $700 Australian at the time, which was a lot of money.
I remember speaking with you and you told me you just got it and I couldn't believe it. They were so expensive and it was just, I was like, nobody else has one. What was even on it? That Breaking the Law game or whatever it was?
There was State of Emergency that came out just a bit later. What came with mine, it was the Gran Turismo 3 bundle. It came with, I believe, the Spec A edition or whatever it was in the box. You know, those little slips that they put the actual console in. And I had FIFA 2001 because that's what I play. And we also got F1 2000. That's how old the game is. I got the PS2 near release back in the year 2000. Crazy.
Do you still have that one?
I No, that original console, it ended up slowly dying, and I ended up getting the slim version when it was gone. Pretty much it wouldn't load 50% of the discs anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which was quite annoying. Yeah.
Yeah, just on the 64, it was amazing because when the PS2 came out, people were comparing the graphics between the two.
Oh, yep.
64 and the PS2. Yeah. But as we saw with the PS2, there's some games towards the end of the PS2's life that you'd think weren't even on the PS2 because the graphics are so good. Whereas on the 64, it's sort of maintained the same amount of detail in the graphics.
Yeah, I'd say to an extent, though. It's more a big comparison with the PlayStation 1, but when the PS2 came out, it just kind of blew like the Nintendo 64, PS1, Dreamcast out of the water.
We didn't actually see, speaking of that, we didn't see much cross-compatibility with the PS1 and the 64, did we?
No, it was just a major competition there.
We had Resident Evil 2, which was on both consoles, and Resident Evil 3.
And that was very lucky to be on there because Resident Evil 2 was such a big game with its music as well, and the cartridges couldn't really handle it. But later on, with technology expanding, they were able to squeeze it in.
I think because the game pack was only 64 megabytes, so that's not much. But also we had Tony Hawk, which crossed over because I remember some people having Tony Hawk 2, and I had it on the 64 as well. So, yeah, that was pretty cool. But, yeah, great console, and just wanted to touch on those memories of when it came out because I'm sure for you and also for me, I know me, but, yeah, it was very exciting, and I was excited when it came out, that's for sure.
No, I was very excited. Like, I loved my 64. It was sad still thinking about when we got rid of it, but
it led into... Do you remember how you felt when you did that?
I was still pretty excited because I was this much closer to being able to afford the PlayStation 2. But now that I think about it back, it's like, why? Why did I?
Yeah, it's a funny sort of feeling, isn't it? Because the funny thing about us when we lost it, we didn't take it and get a GameCube. My brother took it when I wasn't home, which was even, a usual thing for him. Took it when I wasn't home and came back with a Sega Mega Drive.
What?
Yeah, so we got a Sega Mega Drive.
Yep.
And then he decided that he wanted to get a PS1, so he traded that in and got a PS1 with Muppet Racer. I can't remember the other game. It might have been Final Fantasy VII or Crash Bandicoot. But, yeah, we came back with that because he wanted to play Final Fantasy IX. And I'm like, where's my 64? Because I still had Kobe Bryant courtside in my room. I took it into my room every night, thank God. That's the only original card I have is our original Conker's Bad Fur Day in the box and a copy of Kobe Bryant courtside, which isn't boxed.
So I can't believe that. I can because I know him, but I can't believe it.
Yeah, I don't know why we did that, but it wasn't the first time. But yeah, eventually we got a GameCube with Luigi's Mansion. I think we ended up, I think we traded in. Well, the 64 was gone at that stage. The PS1 was chipped, so it must have been bought outright.
Yep.
But we skipped the Saturn, and we didn't have a Dreamcast, so.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, that's good. Yeah, good to talk about the 64. Anything else you want to add on the 64 before we wrap that up?
No, I could go on about it, but
yeah,
we'll be here all day.
We sure will be. All right, we'll quickly go into what we've been playing lately. I know you've been playing some PlayStation 4, so do you want to fire off what you've been playing and a little bit about it?
Yeah, the only game that I've been playing is Days Gone on the PS4. Started it probably the start of this week, and I just can't put it down. Just what to say about it? It's like pretty much a action adventure survival horror type game.
Yep.
And believe me, there has been a lot of jump scares that have actually got to me. Usually I don't scare easy, but when I see like this horde of freaks just running at you, oh my god.
Makes you a bit nervous, does it?
Yeah, it does, because there's nothing you can really do.
I've been to the supermarket with you, so I know what you're like when there's people coming up from high school going, hey, mate, I haven't seen you in years. You're like, oh.
So if you don't know, you're pretty much in a post-apocalyptic world in Oregon with this game. Your name's Deacon, St. John, and pretty much you ride everywhere on your bike. You don't drive a car, it's all bike and it's guns, and it's like pretty much trying to survive in this world. There's a bunch of what they call, they're like infected humans, but they, in the games, they call them freaks. And they're trying to work out a way how to stop them. Like the whole country's like invaded. I don't want to go into too much detail because I'll spoil things, but it's a really good game. It didn't do too well with reviews when it first came out. And I don't know why. I don't know if it's got to do with bugs or, but they were saying there's not enough story development with characters, but I'm quite enjoying it. It's my sort of game that I like to play with the open world where you upgrade things and, I suppose, kill off your enemies. The most downloaded game on the PS Plus network, and it was never a free game, so it must have done all right.
Yeah, I think I read somewhere that it was released during a time when there were some big games coming out, so it sort of fell to the back. But look, it looks cool and the graphics are good, so I'm definitely going to try and get my hands on it when it comes down or when it comes in front of me. So that and Red Dead are probably two games that I'm looking at getting. So you haven't been playing anything else, that's it?
No, that is it. Like, I've spent 30 plus hours on this so far. Wow. Maybe more just this week. Like, because this is my final week of my holiday from work, been trying to beat this thing, and it just keeps going and going. So,
yeah,
I don't know.
That means, All right. Well, as for me, I mean, I beat Link Between Worlds on the, I was playing it on the 2DS. I know I've spoken about how I was playing that. Finished that. So it was nice to finish a game, but not just as, like, it's nice to finish any Zelda game because they're very cool games. This one was fairly easy. Some of the palaces I beat in probably under 20 minutes. There wasn't much to them. I think it was designed that way to be a little bit easier. But yeah, it was nice to beat it. It was a fun game. A lot of the same music from the older Super Nintendo one uses the same map. So yeah, pretty nostalgic effect and good to complete that. Been plodding along with Xenoblade Chronicles X on the 3DS. And this morning played probably 3 hours of Ninja Turtles Mutants in Manhattan on Xbox One. Which was, it's an okay game, just a hack and slash. There's not really much in it, but it's cool to see some of the, I know they're Ninja Turtle characters, but they're also featured in Tournament Fighters on the Super Nintendo, like Aragon, who's the shark. I can't remember the names right now, but they're like the bat guy. It was cool when I was playing. I didn't expect it to see that this morning. I'm like, oh, wow, I haven't seen that character in years. And yeah, it was like a surprise to me. But yeah, the game itself isn't great, but I want to just knock it over. I reckon it's pretty short, judging by the looking through the trophies, you can see which ones are coming, and there's not many till finishing the game. So playing a bit of that, bit of Killer Instinct on Xbox One as well, because it's got the Battletoads in it, which I enjoy looking at because it's cool to see them in 3D. And that's really about it at the moment. You know, there is other stuff I occasionally pick up, but that's the bulk of the games at the moment. Yeah, so I only really beat the Zelda game at the moment, but trying to still finish off a few other ones.
No, that's good. I'm happy that you beat that one because it's been going on for a little bit now. But
yeah,
no, that one, Link Between Worlds, is a good game.
Sorry, I'm losing my voice here. Did you finish it?
I have not finished it. I'm probably three quarters of the way there. I have not picked it up in years, but I don't know why. You know what it's like, but it's something that I want to finish, but it's a matter of remembering what the hell I was doing.
Yeah, it's pretty easy to pick up because it has a big red X where you've got to go. It's one of those games. Like, I find it, the trade in the games these days is they're so easy to navigate because they just tell you where to go. Same with Xenoblade, there's always an arrow saying go this way. And I see that it's sort of disappointing to me because I'm sort of disappointed in myself, to be honest, because Xenoblade's getting a release on the Switch in all new graphics. It's all been redesigned off the same engine they did the second one in, which it looks amazing. I looked at it because I played about 19 hours of it now, and I looked at it online, and the comments, everyone was like, oh, I feel sorry for people who haven't played this game. I can't wait to replay this and stuff, and it looks great. And I'm thinking to myself, gee, do I want to keep going with this or do I just want to wait? But I'm pretty far in now, and it is quite a challenging game. So,
do they get rid of the British accents when they're talking?
I don't think so, but that's one of the things I hate the most as well. Just doesn't fit the game.
I absolutely – that's probably one of the reasons why I stopped playing it, because I just couldn't stand it. It was over the top.
Yeah, there's a game on the 360 – I think it's called like the Golden something. It's an RPG, and I played and I was really looking forward to it, but the voice acting is like super strong British accents. I'm like, what is going on? It just ruins the game.
Yeah, I agree.
I'd much rather like, just anything. I'd have it in Japanese with subtitles, please. Yeah. Anyway. All right. Well, there's not really. Yeah, that's about it. All right. We're going to head into our gaming news for this week. It's been a busy week in terms of retail, with EB Games announcing that they'll be shutting stores around Australia.
Yeah.
So I know this is probably something you've heard of because it's been pretty much everywhere, but I think for a while now we've seen the increased popularity of their sister store, Zing. Is it Zing?
Yeah. No, it's Zing. It's definitely Zing.
Which is the more merchandise-based store. They used to be joined, but they sort of pushed off on their own and been highly successful, but... Yep. EB Games, which is the Australian version of GameStop, has basically become, it has like a hollow feel to it. They've just downsized in stock and the size of the stores and also the locations. Slowly but surely, I saw this coming, and, you know, they haven't offered me anything because I don't trade back games. I always hang on to them, but
yeah,
it's been good for secondhand games, but it's been a long time coming, and there's been a much discussion about people are worried where they're going to get secondhand games from, but you know, there's eBay, there's Facebook Marketplace, there's JB Hi-Fi, there is options, so I don't know why everyone's worried so much.
Yeah, from what I'm aware, they're just closing the non-profit stores at the moment, but the way that the business is going, like GameStop, they're struggling as well. I assume it's coming down to EB Games, and I believe in Canada, they've also got EB Games as well, and I assume some of their stores will just be shut down just so they can stop losing money.
Hmm.
Same with also, you know, you remember Game?
Yep.
It's a UK based, like GameStop or EB Games, but they've got Game. Also in the UK, a lot of their stores are closing down also.
Right, because there is still a few game stores in Australia, one or two. Yeah,
there are more. I think there's some in Sydney, and there might be a couple in South Australia.
Yeah, because I went to one in Adelaide once a few years ago. It's probably gone by now, but the game wasn't a bad store because they held on to PS2 and Xbox original games and stuff like that. But yeah, they shut down probably around just when the PS4 was coming out.
Yeah. I do remember there was one in Eastland and one in Knox, and I even think our old mate Jordan used to work there.
He did, yeah. He worked at the one at Knox City.
Yeah, that's correct. That's correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't mind the store. Like, I used to pre-order there a couple times back when the PS3 was around. Mm-hmm. But yeah, after then, they all just disappeared.
Mm. What's your feelings with EB Games? Have you been a customer of theirs?
Well, I'm a level 4 member, so I do shop there a fair bit, but I always price match there because they clearly charge too much for their games because they're trying to make a bit of a profit because that's all they really sell.
Yeah.
But in terms of shopping there, yeah, I always go in and have a look if. But it's more for the pre-owned games I buy.
Yeah.
Like cheap sale games. If there's something new, I will pre-order there, but I'll just price match it to just say Big W or
Big W.
Target or whatever, yeah.
I don't even know if they sell games anymore. But I think for me, when I was looking for games, probably when the 3DS was probably about halfway through its lifespan, they were dynamite for finding pre-owned rare titles like DS games and stuff. You go to a EB game store, it had PS3, PS4, Nintendo DS, 3DS, you know, Xbox 360, and you could just go through and find pre-owned copies of things that were uncommon, Wii games, Wii U games. Yeah, and I used to just go in there and be like, oh, you know, different stores, you had six or seven different tiles to look through. Yeah. Now, even PS Vita and PSP, but now you just go in, it's Xbox, PlayStation, Switch, and even 3DS is pretty much gone.
Yeah, it's all the same there, just not the same store as what they used to be.
No, there's no game hunting in there like there used to be.
No, like I'd go in there and just flick through all the tiles and be like, yep, I'll take this, I'll take this, I'll take this. But
yeah,
can't find it anymore.
Well, I got a copy of Etrian Odyssey 1 on DS in the box at the one at Blackburn Square just before it closed down. And that was crazy to find that because that's like a $100 game. It was like $6, so there you go. What other news have we got this week?
We got Pokemon Mystery Dungeon Rescue Team DX was announced at the Nintendo Direct this week.
Yep.
I haven't really played the other Pokemon Mystery Dungeon, so I can't really chime in with what this is, but there is a demo available on the eShop at the moment if you do want to try it out. You played it?
I played one of the ones on the 3DS, probably not the latest one, not the Rumble one, one before that, which was about a 60-hour game.
Yep.
Extremely hard. I finished it. What I did hear about this game is that it's a mixture of all the Nintendo DS ones and the Game Boy Advance ones in HD. Okay. So they brought, somehow they're bringing them all into one game, which is cool, but at the same time, I collected all those games and was planning to play through them. So if now it's all in one place, there's not really a reason to. So I'm probably end up getting it on the Switch, but like as the baby approaches, it's a game like that. I can imagine it's going to need a lot of hours to finish it.
Yep. Okay. We've also got a Pokemon DLC announced for Sword and Shield, and it's adding further content, but no extra story, from my knowledge, which is, I suppose, disappointing because I didn't mind the extra story at the end of, or the post-gameplay in Sword and Shield. If there was a bit more of that, then, yeah, I'd probably get it. But if it's just for some extra areas, yeah, no thanks.
Apparently, the game wasn't complete when it was released. They had this in the mix and were rushing it out, so they didn't include it.
Oh, really?
And the argument now is online, people are saying, well, you would have bought, you know, Pokemon Yellow when you bought Red and Blue. Why wouldn't you buy this expansion pack? But for me looking at it, I say, well, they're giving us an expansion that doesn't have a lot to offer anyway. What's to stop them from making another 4 or 5 expansions? Why don't they just take a year? Because the game's been out for probably 2 months. Why don't they just take a year, make a massive expansion or call it something like, I don't know, whatever something, and release it, put new Pokemon in it, put, you know, whatever in it, and just make it something that you will pay $40-$50 for.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, that's my argument anyway.
No, I agree with that.
Yeah.
We've also got Switch sales top 50 million worldwide this week, which is pretty large. And the PS5 logo was recently announced. It's pretty much what we expected it to be. Just like the PS4 logo, but the 5. But anyways, we also had the new Batman game was teased by Warner Brothers, Montreal. And from what I believe, Rocksteady Games, who created the first trilogy, said the Arkham Knight was their last one. So this will be behind the team who created Batman Arkham Origins.
Oh, cool. That's that's a great series.
Yeah. So, like, I love the series. I love Batman Arkham Origins, even though it wasn't made by Rocksteady. But that was it. That was a really good game. It was a prequel to it all.
Yep.
Yeah. I believe it's one of your favorites as well.
Yeah, I was late to the party. I haven't even played Asylum, Arkham Asylum. I haven't even completed
City or Knight.
No, I've beaten Knight and City. I haven't beaten Origins.
Oh, okay.
Did I beat Origins? I don't know. I'm playing
Did you play that on the Wii U?
No, I played them all. I had it, but I played it on the PS3. And there's one that I'm playing at the moment, but it takes place. Yeah, I think it's Origins.
Okay. And that's that. More like detective mode where you got to do
And I think the Joker's just been announced, like just shown up in it.
Yeah,
so I haven't beaten that one. I feel like I got stuck in it. I just find it difficult and I can't be bothered with it.
Oh, dear.
Well, it just gets to points where I'm like, you know, there's six or seven guys with machine guns just swoop down, start beating one up, and then they shoot you and you're dead. And you're like,
come on.
Some people are good at that stuff. I'm not. I don't like sneaking around games. It's like a hack and slash game to you.
That's true. We both have our strengths and weaknesses, don't we?
That's definitely true. Yes. Okay. Well, I think we spoke about Xenoblade getting remade and in new graphics, so that's a bit of news, but we already touched on that.
That's all the news I have on this end.
Okay, we're going to go into our two reviews now, one review each, like we do every episode. So I start off this week, James, my man. And the game I'm going to talk about is a game I had as a kid, and it was for the Game Boy. It wasn't on the Game Boy Color. It was released very early on in the Game Boy's life, 1994, and that game is Wario Land.
Oh, yes. Good game.
Yeah, so is this one you had?
I did not have the original. I had number 2 and number 3 and got number 4 on the Game Boy Advance.
Yeah, see, I had number 2, which I couldn't beat. I beat the first one, but I didn't get 3 and 4. I was going to get 3, but then I ended up getting something else. So I ended up picking up a copy of 3 in Japan and also a copy of 4, which I haven't played yet. But yeah, this game was the first outing for the character Wario. We did see him in Wario Woods, where he plays basically the protagonist who's causing trouble. He's sort of an alternative character to Mario, I guess you could say. Playing some kind of he's like a demigod or an anti-hero. He's a flawed character. His personality is all about personal gain and basically his situation better. So that's sort of what his character is all about. He's like almost like the opposite for Mario, where Mario's trying to help others, he's trying to help himself.
100%.
So as a kid, I thought it was really cool, you know, like, because the game is called Super Mario Land 3, you know, Wario Land Super Mario 3. So I was like, I guess at that time I didn't realize it was working off the same engine as the other Mario game, Super Mario Land on the Game Boy, which is one of the best games on the Game Boy. So it was cool, and this was actually the first game I had on the Game Boy, followed by Pokemon Red. So the goal of the game is to collect coins to buy a mansion or, you know, somewhere to live. And in this case, you're working towards getting the mansion. It plays very similar to other Mario games, especially a Mario Game Boy game. It has the platforming formula, which you'd find in those games, obviously 2D. There's several worlds throughout the game, resulting in a boss fight at the end of each level, which is a little bit different to Mario, more similar to what we saw in Mario Land 3, World 3, but different from the original Mario's, where you get to the flag and that was the end of the level. Power-ups are included in this game, which are a little bit different still. They're in the form of helmets. So you've got a bull helmet, which gives you increased strength and a larger range of charge attack. Jet helmet, which gives you vertical flight and increased speed, and then the dragon helmet, which is sort of like the fire plant in Mario, which you can shoot fire to help you destroy certain boxes and enemies easier. And also in this game is the Starman power-up, which gives you invincibility, much the same as Mario. So in this, obviously it's borrowing heavily from Mario as well, so it's when you do get hit, you shrink down, hit again, lose a life. Jumping on enemies doesn't kill them. It flips them over, giving you a choice to stomp them to their death or pick them up and throw them. You can also toss coins at ranged opponents. Levels have locked doors, which may require backtracking. So you get to the end of the level and you find a locked door and you go, oh, got to go back, you know, find the key, which is something that wasn't possible in many Game Boy games or even mini games in the Mario series up until this point. So there is that replayability of each level to go back and gain the key, but also find, you know, hidden treasures and hidden secrets. And this is also because there's hidden exits in the levels, which result in bonuses and bonus rounds resulting in more treasure, so more coins. The music is slightly off tone, which sets it for like a darker sort of theme, and it sort of reflects the character in the music that makes sense as you're playing it. It's not the traditional upbeat sort of catchy tone that you get in a Mario game, but it's not far off. It's just a little bit sour from that. At the end of each level, there's a trial to win more coins or be punished in the form of a little mini game. You just basically, it's almost like you're flipping a coin and you win or you don't. The game really does stand the test of time for me, especially. And like I mentioned, it is considered to be one of the better titles. I did complete the game, the first one. And I remember when I was doing the last boss, which I believe was the genie, I had to go into the video store with my dad. And at that point, I had to pause it, put it in the car. And I can just remember getting out of the car and watching the little red light on the top of the Game Boy slowly getting smaller. I was like, oh no. It's going to be all over. I said to my dad, like, we're going to get out of here. So yeah, I quickly got back because these are the times, you know, you're not only losing battery life, you're losing daylight, because it was in the evening that we were driving. I was playing in the car. Nowadays I can't play anything in the car, I'll feel sick. So it's available in the 3DS store. When I was researching this, I saw that and I'm like, I've got to go and download it, because I just was looking at some gameplay and I'm like, this game meant so much to me. I played the hell out of it. I really loved it. Being the Game Boy being my first personal console or handheld console that was mine and mine alone, and that's, you know, I played it and no one else touched it, and because it was that, I played it all the time, and it was me and Wario basically. So something I'll be downloading, and apparently it's a really good emulation on the 3DS. Hopefully it's cheap, because, you know, most things on the 3DS are surprisingly cheap, which I talked about last episode.
I would say so, it would be cheap.
And yeah, like you mentioned, there is some, well, we had three sequels now. So we got Wario Land up to 4, then he jumped off and started doing
Home Consoles. And he's got his WarioWare as well.
His WarioWare, but we haven't seen another Wario Land. I don't know if we will. It's pretty uncommon for Nintendo to backtrack and go and say release something and call it, you know, much like Super Mario Sunshine 2, probably never see it. Mario Galaxy 3, probably never see it. Wario Land 5, unfortunately, probably never see it. But yeah, for me, it's a 9 out of 10 game. It's up there in the top 10. Very good game. Easy game to just sit down and play. Not so easy to defeat some of the bosses later in the game, but still fun.
Yeah. No, it's a good series. It's quite a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's just a different take on the series. You know, it's got its pros and cons are in there, definitely, but look, it's no game's perfect, and this is as close to perfect as a Game Boy game could be.
Oh, very good. I like it. And did you say 9 out of 10?
Yeah, 9 out of 10. Just, I would have said probably 8, but just because of the memories and also the fact that I've completed it, it does mean a lot to me to play it, think about it. So yeah, I'll give it a high ranking, but others may not give it such a high ranking, but yeah. I do believe the second one played better.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, there's always something about the original.
No, definitely. And that's where it all started.
That's it.
All right. So the game that I'm going to talk about came out on the PS1, but it was later ported to the Nintendo 64 and the Sega Dreamcast. And the game I'm talking about is Vigilante 8, Second Offense.
Second Offense. Sweet. Yep. Looking forward to this. Miss the fish. Yeah. Good game. I love it, man. Yeah. I'm excited. Yeah. Take it away.
All right. Vigilante Second Offense is the second installment in the Vigilante 8 series, and it's a vehicle action series developed by Luxaflux. It was released in 1999, a year after the first one. And as I mentioned earlier, it came out on the Nintendo 64, PlayStation, and Dreamcast. The first time I played this was on the PlayStation 1, and we hired it from Video Easy in Tacoma. I played it with my stepbrother. I remember he was the garbage truck, and I believe the guy on the bike with the rockets. Absolutely love this game. This is what we'd play every weekend. We'd go up. I don't know why we didn't buy it, but we would go up, we would hire it, come back, play it. So much fun. So much fun.
Oh, yeah.
It's such a good game.
It is. It's bloody awesome.
Vigilante 8 Second Offense is like most vehicle-based action games. The player chooses a character and then controls the vehicle to do battle with, finding and equipping weapons found around the stage. In this game, however, each character gets their own individual weapon. As I mentioned, like my guy, he had rockets, kind of like the 4th of July rockets that would go up, and it would just like homing rockets, while my stepbrother would play the garbage guy, and his special ability was to like eat you up in the back of the garbage truck. And then just, it was a very slow moving vehicle, but it would damage the other person quite a bit. And you would pretty much get other special weapons by running through crates all over the stage. The goal of the game is each player must get the opponent's health down to zero in order to win the match.
Yeah.
The gameplay in Vigilante 8 Second Offense is pretty much exactly the same as the first one, but they just added a few more characters and also added vehicle transformation, where your vehicle can become a hover car, a fan boat for like water, and skis for snow, so you can have better traction on the roads. There is 18 characters in this game, all with different vehicles of mass destruction, and there is 8 locations around the United States that you can play, and one of my favorites being Arizona with their giant ant invasion.
Yep.
As mentioned, yeah, we used to hire this nearly every weekend. I don't know why we didn't buy it, but it was constantly played on the PS1. And how it holds up today, I actually played it not last year, but the year before on the Dreamcast, because I don't have it on the PS1, but I've got it on the Nintendo 64 and the Dreamcast.
Yeah.
And I was playing it on the Dreamcast. It's still fun to play, but the graphics, unfortunately, just did not hold up on this.
Yeah, we had it on the PS1.
Yep.
And I also played it at like an after-school care thing. And yeah, just the fact that you mentioned it, I just remember how much fun it was. All the different power-ups that you get back. I can imagine, though, the graphics would let it down now.
Yep.
But do you know what vigilante means?
Like people taking the law into their own hands.
Yeah, and it's like a tournament, isn't it, in the game?
In a way, remember. I believe there's like there's an actual plot to the game, but it doesn't really, like, yeah. I believe there's this guy trying to take over something, as most games do, and the people are trying to stop him, so I suppose that's where the vigilante comes into play.
Is that it? Yeah, because yeah. I was like, what? Vigilante, like, how does that fit into a Second Offense? Like, I'm like, what does that mean?
Even
I had to like look up the meaning again, because I'm like, maybe I was wrong.
Even 12 years ago, I think that the graphics held up a lot better than they did 2 years ago, because I remember playing it with Scott McDonald at his place, and the graphics. Shout out to Macca. It was still fun. The graphics still looked okay. But it was overall, it's just a fun game to play with someone.
I get that. Was there any plans for any more games in the series?
I don't believe so. I think that was the last one. Meant to be a third one in the mix, but
although we had overall, Vigilante 8 on Xbox 360 2008, which was a remake.
Oh, really?
So that, with new graphics and stuff, which, it's called Vigilante 8. Vigilante Second Offense was the updated version with more characters. So this obviously, but that looks pretty cool. Might have to look into this. Cool game.
Going back, I would give it maybe a 7.5 because there's not much of a story base, but the gameplay is fun. If I'm going to look at it now, that the review might drop down to a 6.5 because of the graphic. Yeah.
It had a song, didn't it? Didn't it have like a song that was like Vigilante?
Second of Defense.
Can we get that for the show? The intro?
I'll make it the intro of the show.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. Well, that's our reviews for this week. So if you enjoyed the show, please remember to go on to podcast subscriber and leave us a little review. It really helps us.
Yeah.
And to follow us at Power On.
Power On Retro Gaming on Facebook. Yep. Power On Retro Gaming on Insta and Power On Gaming on the Little Bird Twitter. And as mentioned, yeah, you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Smart Radio, Wooshka, Spotify, yeah, pretty much wherever you can find us. Unfortunately, in Australia, we can't do Google Podcasts. I don't know why it doesn't let us over here, but when the time comes, we'll be on there too.
And we're looking at getting back to you.
Yes, I believe I've uploaded a few later episodes onto YouTube, but still the last three to go, but all in due time.
Cool. All right. Well, till next time, power on.
Power on.